हरे हे ओ चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Thus, all types of sukriti that nourish bhakti are nitya sukriti. When this sukriti becomes strong, one gradually develops shraddha in ananya bhakti, 11. And one attains sadhu sangha. Birth in a Muslim family is the result of naimitika duskriti, or temporary impious deeds, whereas faith in ananya bhakti is the result of nitya sukriti, eternal pious deeds. What is surprising about this, right? So he's pointing out here is the nitya sukriti, means the devotional activity in the association of devotees, and that develops faith in unalloyed bhakti, right? So therefore, even though his position in society may be from impious activities, but by the devotion being actually transcendental, that situates him in devotional service. So therefore, you could be, you know, a Muslim and a devotee at the same time. Because one's dealing with the material, one's dealing with the spiritual. But if we notice, because he's used the terms nitya and naimittic, then Chudamani is still identifying those. Nitya means the brahminical activities that they do on a regular basis, the main ones. Right? And naimittic means either what they do occasionally, or now he's considering anything that's not brahminical as naimittic. Just like we'll take spiritual as nitya, anything not spiritual is naimittic. He's taking it, whatever's brahminical is nitya, and what's not is naimittic. So he's still identifying it from that platform.
But wouldn't it be easier for Vaishnavas to use some other terminologies? Maybe you won't be confused, Chudamani?
The difficulty is when you use different terminologies, then you think they're not connected. You know what I'm saying? Just like the knowledge of the Ayurveda, the knowledge of the Jyotish, and the knowledge of grammar, the knowledge of this, that. We'll say they're all different things. They're actually one topic that's studied from different angles, like that. Does that make sense? Or like, because we use some terms for the philosophical, other terms for the material, then we don't connect the philosophy to our day-to-day life. Does that make sense? So here is the point is what you do regularly and what you do occasionally. So depending upon consciousness, what you do regularly and occasionally then changes. But the principle remains the same. Right? Just like Mother Yashoda is every day cooking lunch for Krishna. That's nitya, right? Occasionally then she cooks some, you know, bigger thing for Krishna's birthday or some other special occasion. So that's naimittic. Right? Does that make sense? So that principle is reflected here, right? So you're supposed to do everything for Krishna, and so you have your daily sadhana and that, and then you have your activities of that you do occasionally, like Ekadasi and Janmashtami and all these programs. But yeah, but then so that's it's all nitya, but within nitya there's nitya naimittic. Then within naimittic you have what's regular and what's not, but the principle remains the same. You know, there's what you always do and what you don't. That's there. But more than that, important is that there's what's eternal and what's temporary. Right? Because when they say regular, you can either define it regular just meaning every day or regular meaning eternal. You know what I'm saying? So you have the regular and occasional on your eternal platform, and you have the regular and occasional on your your temporary platform. Is that so he hasn't quite caught this yet. Means you could. If he doesn't catch it, then you could change the terminology. But the difficulty is then one thinks it's different subjects. Chudamani. This is what I meant by my previous question. If there's such a thing as bhakti poshaka sukriti, virtue that nourishes devotion, it must arise from some other type of sukriti. But Muslims do not have any other type of sukriti, so it's not possible for them to have bhakti poshaka sukriti either. Right? In other words, bhakti poshaka, it's nourishing bhakti, but it's come from something. So he doesn't have any sukriti, so how could he have that? Right? So he's still only looking at the position of, as a Muslim, he's not doing those activities. So he's not catching that the spiritual platform is beyond the external. Right? Vaishnav Das. That is not a fact. Nitya Sukriti and Naimitika Sukriti are classified separately, so they do not depend on one another. Right, so here's nitya meaning spiritual, naimitic meaning material. Once there was a sinful hunter who was full of impious deeds, who chanced to stay up all night and fast on Shivaratri. Because of the nitya sukriti he accrued from this, he developed eligibility for Hari Bhakti. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam 12:13-16, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. Among Vaishnavas, Shivaji is the best. From this statement is understood that Mahadev is the most worshipable Vaishnava, and one obtains Hari Bhakti by observing a vow to please him. Chudamani. So do you mean to say that Nitya Sukriti comes about by chance, right? Because now if it's nothing to do with the regular duties that you perform from the Varnashram system, then where does it come from? Right? Vaishnav Das. Everything comes about by chance. This is also the case on the path of karma. What is the circumstance by which the jiva first entered the cycle of karma? Can it be anything other than a chance occurrence? The Mimamsa philosophers have described karma as anadi, being without beginning. But actually karma does have a root. The chance occurrence that brings one's original karma into effect is indifference to Bhagavan, Bhagavat Vimukata. Similarly, Nitya Sukriti also seems to be a chance occurrence. Okay.
Excuse me, Mother. I heard that Srila Prabhupada would say that nothing happened by chance. And in this case, for me, it's a little bit confusing.
But what is the context of him saying nothing happens by chance?
Nothing, absolutely nothing.
But what's the question? Just out of the blue, he was sitting there and he said, nothing happens by chance.
No, regarding things that happen to us.
Yeah, so that's what happened to you. That's the result. Right? You understand? There's free will and then there's predestiny. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Free will means what you do with the situation you're in. So you could do this, you could do that. Right? But once you've done it, then there's no question of its free will. It will happen exactly according to what you did. So therefore, there's no chance. So reactions that you're getting from previous activities, there's no chance. So someone would say, why am I getting this? Why did, how you say, does that make sense? Why did the car run over my hamster? You know, like, how is that panya like this? You know, I'm a good person. You know, I do everything properly like that. And he's just an innocent. Nothing happens by chance. So that's reaction. You understand? The point is where the chance comes in is what you're going to do with that reaction. Because you could do this, you could do that, you could do any amount of things. Right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in footnote 6, writes in Madhurya Kadambini, Lord is not dependent on any material cause for his appearance. Similarly, his non-different energy, bhakti, in keeping with its self-manifesting nature, is not dependent on any material cause. Thus it is said, the supreme occupation, Dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendental Lord. Such service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. The word ahaituki, causeless, in this statement indicates that devotional service appears without any material cause, hetu. In such statements, asya drichaya mat katadao, if somehow or another a person becomes attached to hearing about me, Srimad Bhagavatam 11:28, and mad bhaktim cha yadrichaya, somehow he attains my devotional service. That's 11:20:11. The word yadrichaya must mean by its own independent sweet will. The meaning of yadricha in the dictionary is also complete independence. Some people take the word to mean by good fortune. That meaning is not suitable here, for then one must inquire about the origin of the good fortune. Is the cause material pious activities, shubha karma, or not? If one assumes good fortune is generated from pious activities, this would mean bhakti is ultimately generated from material karma. Bhakti would become dependent on material karma, but this is a contradiction to its independent, self-manifesting nature. Again, if one considers this good fortune is not due to pious activities, it becomes both indescribable by words and inconceivable. Consequently, an inconceivable entity is insubstantial and cannot describe the cause of bhakti. If one proposes that the cause of bhakti is the Lord's mercy, then one must find a reason for that mercy. Thus, the statement giving rise to further need for explanation is inconclusive in itself. One may further qualify the statement by saying the cause of bhakti is the Lord's unqualified nirupadi, or causeless mercy. If this mercy is causeless, then one should observe that the Lord bestows it equally everywhere. Since it is not observed to fall on everyone, then this would imply the fault of partiality, vaishamya, on the part of the Lord. Thus the causeless mercy of the Lord also cannot be accepted as the cause of bhakti. Someone may question that the Lord punishes the demoniac and protects his devotees. Is this not partiality? But this type of partiality the Lord shows towards the devotees does not imply a fault in the Lord. Rather, it is an ornament which enhances his nature. This affectionate obligation of the Lord to his devotees is called bhaktavatsala. It is the all-powerful king. It is the all-powerful king which subjugates of all the Lord's qualities and reconciles all contradictory factors. In proposing the unqualified causeless mercy of the devotee as the cause of devotion in another person, one may object that the devotee's mercy, like the Lord's, can be partial. Considering the case of the Madhyama Bhakta, one finds he does not exhibit partiality or discretion in his distribution of mercy. For it is said that in the Bhagavatam, he exhibits prema towards the Lord, friendship to the devotees, mercy to the innocent, and disregard for those hostile to bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:346. In other words, this partiality is accepted as the natural characteristic of the Madhyama Bhakta. Since the Lord is subservient to his devotee, he lets his mercy follow after the mercy of his devotee, and there is no irregularity in this. Now the cause of that mercy manifesting itself in the devotee is bhakti itself, residing within the heart. Without the devotee having bhakti, there is no possibility of the devotee manifesting mercy to others. Bhakti causes the devotee's mercy, which causes bhakti in another person. Bhakti causes bhakti. The self-manifesting, causeless, independent nature of bhakti is thus concluded. Right. So when it says bhakti comes to bhakti, this is the point. Because bhakti then manifests that mercy. Which says the devotee has bhakti, and they manifest that mercy. Because the devotee manifests the mercy, therefore the Lord, following that mercy, he manifests his. So then the person gets that benefit. Right? So the causeless is simply bhakti itself. Right? Yes.
So Maharaj, the mercy given by a devotee must be first.
Yes. Otherwise, where is it going to come from? Because the Lord simply reciprocates with what you do. And how you'll have devotion unless you've got it from a devotee. Right? It can't come from karma. So bhakti has to come from bhakti. Right? So that means the devotion of the devotee has to then touch yourself. Right? Then it will manifest. Yes.
That's why you're saying that bhakti is independent.
Yes. Yes, so bhakti produces bhakti. So he's trying to say is that bhakti is produced by sukriti, but it's produced by its own sukriti. Right? In other words, bhakti being performed and you don't know it's bhakti creates a sukriti. Or it may be you know it's there, but it's not enough where you're completely, fully committed to it. So you could say there's a time, you know, which you can't say how long it'll be, more or less, where you know it's devotional service, but you like being around the devotees, but it's not that you're committed to doing devotional service. It's just nice, you like being with the devotees. But you're not committed to being a devotee. Right? So that would be sukriti. Then there's that which is unknown. You don't even know that it's devotional service. So that would be the poshana, bhakti poshana sukriti. It means it nourishes bhakti sukriti. Right? You know, you just, devotees are doing spiritual activities, you see it, you get that association, but you don't know what it is. You hear them chanting, you take prasad, you know, you see the Roth, you think it's nice arrangements, or you see the deities, you don't know what it is.
Mm. Like that. Krishna says, don't tell to faithless person.
Don't tell to the faithless, yes, because they won't have an interest. So that's why he avoids those who are, you know, basically against the Lord. You know, why waste your time?
And the devotees take risks to teach the God's message.
But what's the connection here?
I mean, sir, because only those who are in bhakti, only he can give the devotees give the bhakti to the other person.
Yeah, so he has the bhakti. And so the innocent is who are going to take it. So he avoids those who are not innocent. Means he may do a public program, and in that program he may have some that are not, you know, having the proper mentality, so they're avoided. But everybody else, he encourages them. Yeah.
I've encountered some people I would personally classify as innocent, but who apparently was very much against the Hare Krishnas, but simply due to ignorance. They just didn't know what it was.
Yeah, so if you can explain, then nice. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you know, so it's just a matter of piety.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the origin of bhakti, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Kesam Tondarkam Papam Jananam Pinekam. So can you explain that statement with context to this?
If you can say it in English.
Yeah, he says that the sins have to be vanquished and there should be enough pious credit to do bhakti.
Yeah, but what is that pious credit? The pious credit comes from bhakti. Bhakti comes from bhakti. Because we have an attachment to the word pious means a religious activity that gives me a fruitive result. The pious simply means following the order of the Lord. Means doing what you're supposed to be doing. Right? So the soul is supposed to be serving the Lord. That's pious. Anything that's not actually service to the Lord, that's impious. So following all the Vedic rules and that, not for Krishna, that's actually impious by the spiritual definition. Why? Because they remain in the material world. That's impious. So it's just a matter of, today he's Mr. Pious, but give us some lifetimes and he's Mr. Not So Pious. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just, so pious means devotional piety that's gained from the devotees. Right? That's why the first rule is don't blaspheme the devotees, because they're the ones that are the cause of bhakti. It means they're the cause, they're the ones carrying the bhakti. Bhakti is the cause of the bhakti. But by bhakti, then you're merciful, and by therefore you give that bhakti. The bhakti is arranged of your mercy. So bhakti is giving everything.
I try to clarify, when the devotee, they're merciful, so they can give bhakti. And the person can get the bhakti if he has enough sukriti, or
You're getting anyway. If they're giving, you're getting benefit. It's only when it creates a certain volume, then you'll develop faith and take it up directly. But you always get benefit by the association of devotees.
Yeah, because it seems some people, even though they receive, they still don't act. And some people, even though they receive so little,
It just means that the person who acts quickly has received so much piety in the past. And someone who is acting slowly is received has received less.
Can we say that a free will person can be manifested in the way they react? So they got the mercy. If they take it, means they also receive free will because they are ready to act on the devotional platform?
That's there, but the point is there won't be an interest until there's a certain volume. Let's say you're starving hungry, and you go into where prasad may be kept, and there's one grain of rice there. You may just not bother, right? But if there was a pile of something to eat, then you would. So that's the point, is that it's there. When it reaches a certain volume, then you act. If the volume's not there, you don't act. Okay. So it's just a matter of how much is there. Because, see, we're looking at it that there's this material world, and it's going on in all its glory. And it's independent scene that happens and all that. Then we're devotees who are these kind of like weird little bunch that's over on the side, little corner and all that. And then we go around and do kind of things, and then, something happens or doesn't happen. But the fact is that it's the Lord's creation, and everything runs according to His laws. Now, whether people recognize it or not, that's another thing. It doesn't really matter. So the point is this process of devotional service and preaching has been going on since time immemorial. So it's always going on, so people have been exposed to that. And so when that exposure reaches a certain amount, then they take up devotional service. Does that make sense? So Prabhupada, I think it's in sixth canto, even goes so far as to say those born in these kind of like aristocratic or noble families, that's only because of bhakti sukriti. Right? They've done a certain amount of devotional service. So therefore the result of it, because it's not been done for spiritual, but they end up in a rich family or a noble family or some kind of high grade family. So think about how many, well placed people there are on the planet. That's all because of bhakti, not because of anything else. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot more going on than we attribute. Does that make sense? That's why, yeah. Yes.
The brahminical activities, they are directed towards Lord Vishnu. So are they not bhakti posture security?
Only if you see them that way.
Like without knowing accidentally.
Yeah, but the point is you're doing the activity. What is the... You're doing the activity, but what is the reason that they're doing it? You're saying the brahminical activity is being done to please the Lord. I mean, you're saying the brahminical activity is directed at the Lord. But what's your purpose in directing at the Lord? What do you want from it?
Just as a matter of duty, the Brahmins are attached to doing those things.
That's just it. That's just, they're just attached to the duty, and that's where it ends.
But accidentally, won't you be considered?
Which brahminical family are you from? Okay. So the point is they're doing it either because they'll get fruitive results or they'll get liberation. Does that make sense? So because of that, the endeavor even though it's connected to the Lord, is considered naimittic because the result they want is temporary.
So here, accidental means indifference.
Accidental means you're coming in contact with the pure devotion. Does that make sense? So what these, you know, at least in this case, what the smartas and them are performing is not connected with pure devotion. It's the activities of worship of Vishnu, but they're doing it for fruitive or for liberation. These reasons. So there's no bhakti, so it hasn't been contacted. Now, if they contact devotee, then they're already performing the devotional activities just without understanding what they're for. You understand? So there's a difference between performing the devotional activity that you don't know what it's for and it hasn't actually touched the bhakti shakti. And then the bhakti shakti is touched an activity, you're performing it, but you don't know what it is. So that's bhakti poshana. Right? When you know what it is, but you haven't actually surrendered to take up the process as your commitment, then that's just bhakti sukriti. You know, in other words, bhakti poshana and bhakti sukriti are the same thing, just one you know and one you don't know. You know, so in general, what most people are doing for the greatest volume of time are the bhakti poshana. So when we say it's bhakti sukriti, then if they don't know, we mean it's the bhakti poshana sukriti. You know what I'm saying? It's just like goes around. Then he doesn't know what it is. So that, but after a while, he wants to know what are these devotees doing. So he inquires, and they say, "Oh, you can come to the temple and see." So now he knows that it's devotees, and kind of there's some kind of thing. So he's taking part in it. But it's not that he's committed to it. It's interesting, you know. So he wants to know more about it. And
so the outside people, they're taking prasadam.
Right, so that's bhakti posha, but who's arranged the prasadam? Yes, but now what if it's arranged by the smarti? So it won't have that effect of bhakti. Right, you understand? So that's the whole thing. You know, maybe punya, but not bhakti. You know, material piety. You understand? So the thing is there's these overlapping. Does that make sense? When you look in a mirror, you see a head. But does it actually, if you put focus on it, does it actually give any benefit? No. You have to understand that that head is a reflection of the real head. Then you can get some benefit. Right? Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? You see the head in the mirror, right? Where do you put the shaving cream? On your face or in the mirror? Yes, yeah, so that's the point. If it's not put in, it's not connected to the original, it doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? It means you can put it on the mirror, shave the mirror, and go very smooth, right? Yeah, but how come it still looks so stubbly? You know, but smooth, right? You know? So that's the whole difficulty, is that it's where you're looking. So then the question comes up, Mataji's saying, why not use different terms? It's the same head. You know, so then we should call this a head, and we should call that something else, Guggenheimer or something. Does that make sense? Then people get confused. Does that make sense?
But so adult is basically coming from that confusion between material.
Yes, so it means if we are observant. Then, you know, for the last so many years that we've been discussing, you know, technically all these points, this is always the confusion, where there's black and white together at the same time. Because if you say it's black or it's white, then it's very clear. But when it's black or white, depending upon how your consciousness, then it becomes confusing. Because we just want to go form. This is a rock. You know, very easy. Right, but if we want to say no, this hardness is Krishna's potency, so it's not actually the rock that's hard, it's Krishna's potency is in this rock. That's where it gets confusing. So is it hard or not? You know, yes, you know, but it's Krishna who's hard, it's not the rock. But you know, but if I can use a rock, it's hard, I can use it for things that need hardness? Yes, you can. So then the rock's hard. No, the rock's not hard. It's in a sense. So that's the difficulty. It always comes back to whenever you're dealing with gray, the questions are always about gray. You know, occasionally in the beginning, we'll have, you know, black and white. Okay. But once that's understood, which is straight and forward, but then the next so many years, all we're asking about is gray. You understand? So what it is we catch the gray in one context, but then in another context, we don't see it. So then it's a matter of, well, how to see it. But it's exactly the same thing. So as we go through the subject matter, the discussion is the same thing, but you're changing the area. So therefore, it seems like it's fresh. But what about, you know, no, it's the same thing. We already know it. We just don't know how to apply it there. You know what I'm saying? The stone is, okay, I get it, the stone is hard. But then the brick is also hard. So is the brick hard? No, it says Krishna's posing the brick. You know, so it's the same. Does that make sense?
So hard, meaning we don't understand
the principle that's working out? No, we're not connecting, we understand the principle, but we haven't connected that principle is functioning in this particular situation. So that's why I was mentioning before the principle of manana, right? It means that you hear, so then you contemplate, because you've heard, so it's like, the philosophy, all devotees know the philosophy, but the difficulty comes is how to apply it into the various situations, because then it's something very different, but it's actually the same thing. Does that make sense? So the philosophy is known, the principle is known. We're just not catching that principle applies in this situation. Does that make sense? So then we discuss it, then we see, oh, it's here, so it broadens. Mm-hmm. Right, that's the whole idea, is that when it broadens one's understanding. So that's what you're trying to do. Then you can see more and more Krishna in all the various situations that there is. Otherwise, we see Krishna in the temple like that, or when we're chanting japa, you know, we're sitting on the train there and looking at everybody else, and, you know, we're chanting, so, you know, we're in the spiritual world, and everybody else is in Maya. You know, so it's simple like this. But then the thing is then, you know, we're just sitting there and chanting, okay, but the other person's there, you know, and they're taking care of the baby, and they're crawling all over the place and trying to, you know, do all these things, and then the other kid's doing something, and then, you know, like that, and, you know, don't put that in your mouth, you know, it's just going on. So you just think, wow, look at all this Maya, so much attachment, this, that. So it works great until we get home, right? And then our kids are there and doing the same thing. Hey, don't do, you know, like that. And then we can't see the connection like that. So otherwise, then we're seeing, here's Krishna, there's Maya. But the problem is because we're dealing with that Maya, then it's also functioning on Krishna's rules. So then you can see Krishna within that. So then when you're looking at the others, you're thinking they're attached, but there's all these elements of Krishna there. So we can see Krishna there, but the living entity that's being involved is not seeing Krishna there. That's the Maya. But we just take it that dealing with kids is Maya. Do you understand? But it's not, it's dealing with kids not connected to Krishna or not having the conscience. That's Maya. You understand? You know, you're walking down the street and there's the young guys that got their cars, they're sitting there, their headlights, you know, revving their engines, looking at each other, and you think, oh, this is all Maya. You know, but that means the car's Maya and all those different things are Maya and being teenagers are Maya and all that. But then the problem is, what left is not Maya? Right? Only the soul. Right? So what philosophy are we left with? Right? You know, it's the Maya bodies, it's all Mayas, so therefore there's only Brahma. So then the difficulty is that when we have to deal with that, now when we have to drive the car, but then the car is Maya. You understand? So then how you deal? So then because we don't understand that principle, then we just drop the whole thing. I'm just being practical. Okay, if I'm driving the car, you know, for the doing some work for the temple, then okay, it's the temple, my car, I see it like that. But let's say I have to go and, you know, take the kid to the dentist. Right? Then it's just, I can't deal with it, and I don't want to be in Maya because I'm a devotee, so what should I say? I'm being practical. We're not fanatic. You know, sometimes you have to do these things. Right. Well, most of the day you have to do these things. Right? you understand? So the point is it's Krishna that makes it. So all these different situations. Okay, now we've worked it out going to the dentist. Okay. But what about when you go to the doctor? Right? You understand? So, okay, we worked out to go to the doctor. You know, what about when we have to go down and get a visa? You know, okay, we worked that out, but you understand? So all it is all these situations. So manana means you contemplate the philosophy. That principle is there. What are the, we know some details, so we connect it to the next details. Right? And so that's why the contemplation is important, because that's where you're going to be connecting, means you're going to be using the, what do you call it? That process of the nyaya, in that you're going to see is, okay, then this situation here, going to the doctor, okay, then is connected to Krishna because we require, proper health for doing our service to Krishna, right? So then is there. So now I have going to the dentist. So dentist is there, it's still a consideration of health, right? So then, okay, so to connect that to Krishna, then that means that the connecting, the middle factor is that, okay, the health is there so you can perform things nicely for Krishna. So then from the one, we can connect it to the next. Does that make sense? So then that's an easier thing. But let's say the car, now it's not a matter of health. You know what I'm saying? People don't generally drive the car for health. Maybe they roll the window down, smell fresh air. Okay, that works if you're up in, Alaska or something. But if you're in New York, I'm not sure you would get much fresh air. So the whole point is, actually, they probably got some fresh air the last few days. Lots of fresh air, I'm not sure that they appreciated the fresh air.
You can't really drive, you can swim.
Yeah, yes, of course. You get it. That's why we have a boat, right? So, therefore, then I have the car as the minor term, and then I'm supposed to have connected to Krishna, or as the major. But what's actually connecting? Because it's not health. Okay. If I'm going to get health, I roll down the window. Okay, like that. Or if it's smoggy, I roll up the window. If you're in Los Angeles, you roll up the window, right? I guess if you're in Halifax, you roll down the window. But then you might freeze. So then, Does that make sense? So now what's going to be the middle term? But the middle term is actually the service. So therefore, the health element is service. So health on its own is not devotion. So it's just the connection of service. So then the service of using the car, that connection, so driving the car, then it becomes devotional service. Does that make sense? So, but the difficulty is I've been looking at it from health, and I've connected those. So, I go to the dentist, okay, I go to the hospital, hey, I go to the pharmacist also, or hey, I go to the market and buy some organic vegetables, because I can connect so many things, because now I've caught the health thing. But now it's not health, now what? So that's contemplation. Then we start to see that, and then those things, it expands again. You understand? So that's what's happening, because otherwise means it's coming, but then the doubts come up as if we haven't even heard this before. Right? But as soon as it's explained, then immediately we understand it. Right? If we remember back, is that you get into one of these points, we go on for days about this, sometimes weeks. But now it'll be 5 minutes because we just didn't make the connection. Does that make sense? Is it all? Yeah, so that's what manana is for. How to apply what I've heard into the situation that I'm in. Right? Then by doing that, then we get realization. Right? It means, of course, there's understanding, but by that constant practice, we get realization. So therefore, we always act according to that. Because otherwise, if I understand, okay, you should drive the car for Krishna, then that's nice. But unless I realize, I won't do it. Right. So that's why then the manana is important. It's not that I hear, therefore now everything's understood. It means it's understood, but now everything's perfect. Right? Yeah.
And then there is a set point of justification of your own desires in line connecting with Krishna.
Yes, but the point is that when you're connecting, then there's, as we see, they keep going back. Like we've noticed the logic that is being used by means Chudamani and Vaishnava Das and here Vishwanath and his purport. They're taking, okay, there's here, and so then here's the mercy, but where does the mercy come from? And then that, then where does that come from? Okay, so it's because, okay, it's good for health and you're healthy, you're good for Krishna, but the point is do you want to be healthy because it's service, or you want to be healthy because of you just want to be healthy, because not being healthy is a problem. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of you're only worried about health because then you can do service. So if you're always doing service, then you'd always be being healthy. You know what I'm saying? But then if you're only occasionally, then that other part of being healthy, then what's that for? Yeah. You know, in other words, if you do, let's say, you do something that, you find something that's healthy. Okay? Then you would do that and leave it at that, and that would become part of your practice. But are we leaving it at that? Or are we spending hours and hours on the internet looking up newer and newer ways to make ourselves more and more healthy? Right? Yeah. So then why are we doing that? We already have something that will make us healthy. But no, this one says that actually will not make you healthy, and that one says this one, that, and that. And so then there's all these, and so all the contradictions. So then what we'll do is the things that we like. If it says, let's say, eat spinach, then it'll be healthy. If we like spinach, then we'll choose that one. But if we don't like spinach, we'll say, see, here it says don't eat spinach. You understand? So then we'll put together our own concoction of that, and it's all that. But that's for us. Then we'll connect that to Krishna. And so when we do that, then the benefit of all that time spent, that'll all be connected. But the problem is our motive for it is not for Krishna, it's for ourselves. So then that's going to give a material result. Right? So that's going to be so much anxiety and this and that. And even though we have all these amazing ways to make ourselves healthy, we're not becoming healthy. Right? Does that make sense? Because the things that actually make us healthy is not the things we're looking at. Right. The Ayurveda says proper food, okay, but proper food means defined by what actually humans should eat and how they should eat it. You understand? Like that. So that's not necessarily what we're looking at. How are humans supposed to eat? What's the culture? No one's looking that one up. You know? Like that. Proper sleep, right? And then it says celibacy. These three, if you have them, you'll be healthy. Right? So any of these not followed, that will ruin the health. And then especially in the modern culture, hey, who's going to follow any of these? You know what I'm saying? So then? Yes.
So Maharaj, in the ladder of yoga, I would connect initially the elements which I like, and then I'll find that the elements Krishna likes.
Yes.
Start following those forms.
Yes. So that means you reverse it. That's what Krishna's talking about in the Gita, is that you're following because you like to follow that, which is fine because you've connected to Krishna. But ultimately, you follow because that's what Krishna likes. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea, is that, okay, let's say I'm cooking potatoes because I like them. But then if we find Krishna likes potatoes, then I'm cooking because Krishna likes them. That's the difference. You know, I'm going because I like, but I'm connecting to Krishna, so it becomes spiritual. But there's still that element of mix. But when I'm doing it just because it pleases Krishna, then that's the idea. So that's what one's trying to get to. That's the element of pure devotion. But the point is you do, like Arjuna is performing his Kshatriya duties because it pleases him, right? He's on that battlefield because he wants to kill Duryodhana and anybody who is in support of Duryodhana. Why? Because it will please him. Right? Does that make sense? But now after hearing the Gita, now he's going to fight on the battlefield because it pleases Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, now he will do things to please Krishna, since he's a Kshatriya, and he's good at fighting, and since he's on the battlefield, and Krishna wants the battle to happen, so therefore, he will fight for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just the same thing. It's just where you start. You start with yourself. You start with Krishna. So self-realization is there, but you can only understand yourself in connection with the Lord. So ultimately, Krishna has to be the center. So self-realization means understanding who Krishna is.
In this case of Arjuna, the culture is already in place. So for him, it is a change of mentality mostly.
Yes.
For us converted devotees, there is a change of culture and mentality.
But the important is the change of mentality. If the mentality is there, you don't mind anything else. You know what I'm saying? It's like, let's say the guy has just come in contact with the devotees. So he's just come from work. You know, he's wearing his suit. Like that, he comes in, he puts down his briefcase and says, you know, can I do some, see some devotee doing something, he helps like that. Does anybody comment about his clothes? Nobody. Okay, but the guy who's been around for 30 years, he used to be temple president 20 years ago, and, you know, he's quite active on, you know, internet, and he's got this and that to say about it, and he shows up in the temple, you know, at a time wearing, you know, karmic clothes, then it looks funny. Why? Because that's not a time when you would be, you know. It's Sunday. Why you be wearing that? Well, I like wearing it. What's the problem with it? You know, what's the big deal? You know what I'm saying? The other guy doesn't even think about it. He just sees devotional service as doing activity. He doesn't even connect it with what you dress, what you do, this, that. It doesn't matter. He'll go home and he'll take his food, he'll offer it to Krishna. So, therefore, it's just the change of consciousness. The problem is when the consciousness isn't that much change. So it's more change, less problem. Less change, more problem. So if the consciousness is there, that's the... Is that my... Yeah. Is that okay? Okay, so then this gives rise then to Chudamonis. In your opinion, is there no difference between an Aryan and a Yavana? So he's talked about all the spiritual stuff and this and that, but your bottom line, is there a difference between an Aryan and a Yavana? Vaishnavdas. There are two kinds of differences. Paramartika, those that relate to absolute reality, and Vyavahartika, those that relate to practical experience. There's no paramartika difference between Aryans and Yavanas, yet a Vyavaharika difference does exist. The term Vyavaharika refers to worldly customs. In domestic life, Yavanas are considered untouchable, so their association is unsuitable from the Vyavaharika or practical point of view. Aryans should not touch water and food that has been touched by a Yavana. The body of a Yavana is insignificant and untouchable because of his unfortunate birth. Chudamani. Right. So now, okay, now he's, because he hasn't been able to catch between spiritual and material, right? Because it's like he doesn't know about it, therefore whenever it's nitya, he thinks it means material. But he's explained about the spiritual, but he hasn't caught that therefore nitya means the eternal. Chudamani. Then how can there possibly be no difference between Aryans and Yavanas from the absolute point of view? Please explain this clearly. In other words, if on this lower platform, then how is it on the higher platform, right? You know, in other words, he doesn't know how to do his third grade math, but if you give him, you know, the quantum physics, oh, he works that right out, no problem at all. Yeah, it's just like, yeah, it's just, you know, just third grade stuff, really problem.
So this is actually the same question as with the brahminical and the transcendental activities we had a few days ago. Brahminical activities you couldn't do, but Vaishnava.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes. Like that, you can see, any devotee can do that Vaishnava activities, which is the pinnacle of Brahminical. But he may really not be able to figure out which end of an Achman spoon is, you know, you hold on to. But that doesn't matter, like that. So, yeah.
So they, for example, in Puri, they don't allow white people to come in. Based on that,
Vyavaharika? Yes, Vyavaharika. Because they're not looking at it from the spiritual. Those that do look at it from that, then they don't mind, but because you have 2,000 of the other ones, they can't be overly too prominent, unless they're just so big and so powerful that it's very rare you get, you know, a connection with them. You know, but then the point is even though you're Western, you shouldn't look Western. You know what I'm saying? You know, that's the point, isn't it? You look too west, it's not going to fly. like that. So, yeah, so that's the Vyavaharika. So now what his weakness is he is thinking that it's an ascending process. You know, we've come up from, you know, other activities, we've made it to the Brahminical platform. Now as a Brahman, then, and we're worshipping Vishnu, like that. And so now the natural thing is from there it'll go into the bhakti, and then from there it'll go, you know, into the transcendental. So, but what they're not understanding is it's a descending process. So the spiritual is actually the main thing. Mm. And that can touch wherever, because it's the universal principle. It's just that it happens to touch here, touch there. Yeah. Like that. So this is the, you know, now he's getting it. Because now he's, okay, his thing is you're not distinguishing, and oh, but the devotees and this and that. But isn't there not a difference? Yes, there's a difference. Okay, so if there's a difference, then how can you say that? Vaishnav Das. The Shastras have affirmed this lucidly. Brigu Vara Nara Mataram Tarayet Krishna Nam. O best of the Brigus, Sri Krishna Nama delivers all men. According to the shlokas, yavanas and all other human beings have an equal opportunity to attain the supreme goal of life. Wow, I've never seen supreme broken like that. Yeah, I mean, it can be done, but I just haven't seen it done. Yeah. Those who are devoid of nitya sukriti are known as dvipada pashu, two-legged animals, because they have no faith in Krishna Nam. Such people have no human qualities, even though they have attained a human birth. It is said in the Mahabharata, right? So when we're saying, until atato brahma jigyasa, that can include one, you know, someone who's uncultured and everything, but it can include someone who's practicing all the Brahminical things. Mm. If they're not interested in who they are, technically they're not human. Mm. Right? Because human means to inquire. They have the human form. That's why we use the term human form of life. Because the form is there. Right? But what generally how we take it is that, you know, if it's good, then it's already on that higher platform. And if it's not good, so a two-legged animal is this really gross, rough, you know, guy like that. But if they're cultured or sophisticated, then they're not. Then they're automatically human. No, we're saying is that rough guy, the cultured guy, are both, you know, how you say, animals, right? It's just like, you know, because we'll say that, you know, the rough guy, he's the animal. How rough is a hamster? Right? You know, certain deer, certain birds, you know, they're all very pleasant and nice and everything like that, you know. And then you have animals that are really rough. So within animals, you have this whole range of very sophisticated, not this, that, you know, very pleasant and interactive, or, you know, get too close, bite your finger off or something, you know. So it's, you understand, there's this wide range. So the point is all that is reflected into human society, because how did they become that? And why were they a sophisticated animal? Right? Because they were sophisticated, you know, in the human form. Why are they a rough animal? They were rough in human form. You understand? So the point is that you connect it to Krishna. That's when it takes on the actual qualities of human being. Right? That's what will free you from falling back into the animal species. Mm. That's what it means, that they never vanquished. Because when you fall into the animal species, you can't understand God consciousness. Right? You know, the animal can be nice, friendly, take prasad, you know, stuff like that, you know, the vegetarian cat or vegetarian dog, you know, hippies all have them, right? You know, so, you know, that's at least in the house. They don't know what happens when they go outside the house, but hey, you know. In a sense, so the thing is it's there, and they think, yeah, it's great, it's nice, you know, we're vegetarian, he's vegetarian, we're all the same, and they're not wrong, actually, that it's not that the dog's brought up, they're kind of, Such people have no human qualities, even though they have attained a human birth, it is said in Mahabharata, right, because they don't have the qualities. It's just the modes of nature. You can say, no, but he's nice and that, and he's nicer than most devotees. No, that's the modes of nature are nicer than most devotees are manifesting, because that's all the qualities they have. Perform devotional service, they'll get more. He doesn't have any good qualities. That's just the modes are manifesting that. Because you come back in a few lifetimes and, you know, he won't have those qualities. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, this human qualities means those 30 qualities mentioned in Narada Muni and Srimad Bhagavatam?
Yes, but then connect, yes, then you can take it up. But the point is, if you don't have that interest in what is human, means you'll be following the Varnashram, so then you're better. But the point is it doesn't actually become human until you inquire why. Yeah. Right? So if he's inquired why, that puts him on the human platform, even if it's just very mildly. Right? You know, because so there's so many who are human. They're wanting to know why in this, but they don't necessarily apply it to a wide range. So here and there they'll apply it, but not so many places. But the Brahminical culture is so that you're applying it at all kinds of places. That's the idea. Yes, it is said in the Mahabharata, O King, one whose past pious deeds are very meager cannot have faith in Mahaprasad, in Sri Govinda, in Sri Krishna Nama, or in the Vaishnavas. Right? So, one doesn't have faith in these, then it means piety is less. One has great faith in these, piety is more. No, it means devotional. But also, means you could also have piety that you respect them all. Right? It means just like we see Chudamani, he has the piety, he's respecting the Vaishnavas. In general, how he deals and all that, but he doesn't understand their position. So you could say is by having the volume of material piety, he materially respects them. So at least he deals properly. But to have actual faith, that would require the devotional. But it can mean to have faith means, because faith only comes from, these are devotional elements, so they can only come from bhakti itself.
This is
Mahaprasadi Govinday. Nama Brahmani Vaishnave. Then Swalpa Punya, Swalpa means little. Punya, fine. Swalpa Punya, Vatam Rajan, Vishvaso Naiva Jayate. Means it, yeah. Nitya Sukriti is great Sukriti that purifies the jiva. Naimitika Sukriti is insignificant Sukriti that does not have the power to awaken Shraddha towards transcendental objects. So now he's giving it very clear, right? Because he's brought it down to all these other arguments. Now it's just very clearly this one point.
So there's Bhakti Sukriti, Nitya, and Naimitika is just Punya?
Yes. So Punya and Sin, those are Naimitika. Because sometimes you're doing one, sometimes you're doing the other, right? But the bhakti, that's nitya. Okay, so nitya sukriti is great sukriti that purifies the jiva. Naimittika sukriti is insignificant sukriti that does not have the power to awaken shraddha towards transcendental objects. So shraddha means you have faith in transcendental objects. If you have faith in material objects, that's naimittika sukriti. So that's insignificant. We may think it's a very great thing, because the problem is we've taken it that being this in this position, being the Brahman, being the very pious person, that's a great thing. But actually, that's not such a great thing. It's still material. Great is devotional. You know what I'm saying? You know, so of the non-great, then the Brahminical platform is the best of the non-great. You understand? Like that.
Aren't they all equally non-great? Isn't it that when they're connected to Krishna, the Brahminical becomes the best of the great?
Yeah, but that's there. But even amongst themselves, then you'll say the Brahminical is better than the non-Brahminical, simply because the Brahminical is more ideal for performing devotional service than the non.
Make the switch.
Yeah, but only because those practices are more regulated and everything like that. But a devotee, he's regulating his life because of devotional service, so therefore it doesn't matter what the medium is. You understand?
Yeah.
Because he's already performing the activities of the perfected Brahman.
So alright, this will be also in that gray area because the mechanics is similar, so that's why it's the best of the world.
Yeah. Mechanics are similar, it's just a matter of what you're using it for. That's it. Give an example. Let's say you have some very nice kitchen utensils and then you have some not very good quality kitchen utensils. Now, if you're going to use them for Krishna, then naturally using the better utility, it makes it work nicely. But the point is even if you only have inferior, if you're using it for Krishna, it's still perfect. Okay? But the idea is that if you're doing something for Krishna, use the nicest stuff. Right? But actually, the main point of nicest is what's the mentality, right? Now, let's say you have a non-devotee, right? And he's going to cook. Now, what utensils will be the best for cooking? The superior ones or the inferior? The superior. You understand? It doesn't matter on the spiritual platform, on the material platform, he'll get better results from the better quality than from the non-better quality. But ultimately, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's all useless. Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that we start wherever we are. Then we start to see, well, what's better for Krishna? What kind of results Krishna likes? That's why we will improve the quality of our material situation. So you don't have to do anything other than change the consciousness. Change the consciousness, that will automatically happen with time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. All right. I had a realization about an example of cooking. First time I went to the temple, they served a cake which didn't raise, so it was like very flat.
Yes.
And some rye, which was from the morning. But I couldn't forget the taste for like the whole week until we went to the next Sunday feast. And then I was thinking, how could I still remember a cake which is so kind of hardish and this rye which is coldish? But somehow the taste stayed in my memory for the whole week.
I need
to take that again.
Yeah. Listen, sorry, the cake rose this time. Yeah, that's the specialness. That's why it doesn't really matter. It's the consciousness. So in other words, the consciousness is really good, but their technique or their ability wasn't so good.
Right. But in this connection, then we observe this non-based thing now. We don't appreciate things. Our consciousness is no good.
Well, you do have that element there, but then there's also the point is that it's been a few years, so devotees could have learned to cook by now. You know what he's probably talking about is some people are very new and don't, you know. But does that make sense? Yeah. But yeah, it means that there's also the difference between whether your taste in Krishna consciousness is based on the quality of the performance of the devotional activity or it's not. Does that make sense? Yeah. So ultimately it doesn't matter. As long as it's prasad, it's perfect. As long as it's kirtan, it's perfect. Right? But in the very beginning we don't care unless we have a particular background like that. But the point is here it's that he's been able to discern it's not cooked really well, but he can't forget the actual taste of Krishna. That's the point he's remembering. You know that. So. But then look at it this way. You could also check this aspect is that now if the piety wasn't enough, why would he have eaten it in the first place, knowing that it wasn't properly cooked? So that was only out of culture that he didn't want to make everybody else there feel bad. Therefore, he's eating it. You know, but if he'd been from some, you know, lesser pious, you know, upbringing, then he probably would have not bothered. Do you understand? No?
When you spoke about the change of consciousness, do you know if there is a between the two, ear, manana, and realization? So change of consciousness, where it is...
The change of consciousness is there from the beginning, because why are you hearing unless you have that faith?
Yes.
Why are you contemplating and practicing unless you have the faith? You understand?
Yes.
But you could say the dynamic change is with nididhyasana. Because it's by practicing the devotional service you get that realization. That's where it's the most dynamic. But the point is that you're doing it, it's already, you've accepted it. You know, like we'll be saying, oh, your mind is bothering so much, and I'm trying to chant, it's thinking of this and that. You know, so we'll take it as that, you know, there's nothing there. But why do you have faith that by chanting that it will be good, even though the mind's not cooperating? The point is that faith is there. That's why you're engaged in the process. But it's not going so smoothly. Right? So already that devotional foundation is there. Is that a sense?
And this depends also of our desire to develop this Krishna consciousness.
Yes, it means it's all based on desire. Everything's desire. If you don't desire, it won't. Why will it happen? Right? It means you don't desire it, then why should it? Why would it be manifest? It means you're engaged in devotional activities, so therefore you're getting purified. Right? But unless you want to develop love for Krishna, why would that happen? Right? So in other words, the piety may increase, the bhakti sukriti, and then when you actually focus on it, then you may go. But if you have that desire, even though the sukriti is not there, you'll move forward towards that. So either way, but it's more dynamic if you want it. That's the point. You want Krishna consciousness, that's why it'll happen. You're not so worried about it, then it will happen slowly. Is that something? Okay. Okay. In this material world, there are four transcendental objects that awaken spiritual consciousness: Mahaprasad, Krishna, Krishna Nam, and Vaishnavas. Chudamani smiled slightly at this statement. He said, "What kind of strange idea is this? This is simply the fanaticism of the Vaishnavas." Right now, he's kind of the point. He doesn't have any more answers, so now he's going to the what was it? Or in Nyaya, the one where you just attack the other person. Like that. What was that? Yeah, irrational argument. Yeah.
Is it unfair reply?
Yeah, unfair reply. You're starting to use those now, because now he's run out of things. Because you know? Before he thought it's going his way.
Yeah.
And then it's like, hey, wait a minute.
Hey, wait.
How can rice, dal, and vegetables be chinmai, spiritual? There's nothing that you Vaishnavs are incapable of. Right? Vaishnava. See this thing? He cannot understand what's spiritual, but he's so pious. This is the point. Right? But, as we see, he wasn't as pious as his father. Right? He was more pious. Vaishnava Das, whatever you do, please do not criticize the Vaishnavas. This is my humble request. In a debate, one should argue the points in question. What is the use of deriding the Vaishnavas, right? Because, in other words, Nyaya is defining all these principles that would come up in a debate.
Yeah.
But some of them are useful and some of them are not.
Yeah.
Right? So they're learned so that you know what's not useful. So one, you don't use it. And two, if someone else uses it, then you try to correct it or, you know, keep it on its proper position. In this material world, Mahaprasad is the only food which is fit to be accepted because it provokes spiritual consciousness and dissolves one's materialistic nature. Right? So even as we went through Manu, it says that what's offered, the remnants from sacrifice and the remnants that are offered to the brahmanas, these are the only things that one should eat. Right? So now, the point is Chudamani may be following that, because that's the rule. Because he doesn't have a problem with Mahaprasad. He has a problem with that Mahaprasad is rice, dal, and sabjis. Right? So therefore, they're doing it because this is what you're supposed to do. So these are the pious activities of the Brahmins. They don't understand that the sacrifice, if it's offered to Vishnu in devotion, it's transcendental. But the sacrifice offered to Vishnu just in the mode of goodness only is the mode of goodness. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why one doesn't take the remnants of the offerings to the demigods. Because it's not going to be transcendental. It may be according to all the Brahminical rules and done very properly. You know, it's not that, oh, because they're not proper Brahmins. No, they may be proper Brahmins, doing everything proper, but it's not transcendental because the consciousness is not. Okay. Therefore, Sri Upanishad says, every animate and inanimate, everything animate or inanimate that is within this universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Whatever exists within the universe is connected to Bhagavan's potency. One will give up the worldly-minded spirit of enjoyment if he considers everything to be related to Bhagavan's chit-shakti, spiritual potency.
Maharaj, is this why you mentioned that he doesn't see an opportunity for enjoyment?
Yes. It means, in other words, you see the Lord's energy, but if you see that the energy is connected to the Lord, so therefore it should be engaged in the Lord's service, where's the opportunity for sense gratification? Right? So it's the same thing. So that's what we're saying is this principle, that technical principle, if one can see like that, then it breaks one's trying to enjoy the material energy. But the point is it's supposed to be used in the Lord's service. That's the actual superior view. Right? Does that make sense? But by habit, we get distracted by this inferior view. So we should be using things in Krishna's service, but we see opportunities for sense gratification. So instead of serving, we get involved in sense gratification. So our only interest in not being engaged in sense gratification by seeing that is so that we'll engage in Krishna's service. Right? That's the idea. Does that make sense? It means someone is pious, then it makes it easier to do the devotional activity simply because he's not attracted by impious work, right? Because it's pious work that you're engaging in devotional service, not impious, right? So if one's attracted by impious, then how do you connect? How do you use? Right? So if someone's pious, it's easier. Does that make sense? Right? It means if they're giving you the cake, and you looked at it, and then you stood up and says, "You call this food? This is nonsense." You know, like that. You know, my dog eats better than like, see, excuse me. In your case, my armadillo eats better than this. You know, no, right? You know, then that would have been, you know, a lack of piety there, and you would not have, you know, properly, and you wouldn't have, you would have been remembering it, but not from a positive position. No. Yeah, so that's why the material piety has a value, but it ultimately doesn't matter because the association of the Vaishnavas and the performance of devotional activity generates its own pious activity because it's the ultimate pious activity. So that's why he gives the example of the hunter or others that they don't have that culture. Magrari doesn't have any culture, right? He's not a nice person. But he develops all good qualities by the association of the devotees. But that's only through devotional service. Right? So it's useful if it's there, okay. But even if it's not there, devotional service will provide it.
So you also mentioned before that...
A little louder.
By culture, they came to the philosophical understanding, and we, by philosophy, we came to a cultural understanding, like Migrali, he wasn't nice, but by devotion, he developed it.
Yes, yes. It means they come up to that platform, but still, unless it's touched by devotional service from the devotee, it won't make that connection. It won't cross. So that's Chudamani's problem, is how is it crossing? He's seeing it's just material, so the material is the cause of karma, is the cause of bhakti. So then Vaishnava Das has been very careful to point that out, but he can't catch that. I mean, it's the philosophy, okay, he understands it, but on the bottom line, then he can't get that. Mm-hmm. Whatever exists within the universe is connected to Bhagavan's potency. One will give up the worldly-minded spirit of enjoyment if he considers everything to be related to Bhagavan's chit-shakti, spiritual potency. Right? It's all connected. So because it's there, the Lord's connected. That means it's him and his chit-shakti that are interacting. The reflection of that is how everything works here. So that means it's Yogamaya is what he's interacting with. It's Mahamaya is the reflection, is how it works. So the mechanics are the same. So it looks like a pillar. It looks like this. It's not really a pillar. But it acts like that because it's acting according to the reflection of a real pillar. Right? Does that make sense? Because the real one is engaged in the Lord's service. So you engage in the Lord's service, then it acts as a real pillar. Right? An introspective jiva will not be degraded if he accepts only those worldly things that are necessary for the maintenance of his body, considering them to be the remnants of Bhagavan. Right, it's because it's by Krishna's grace that one has them. On the contrary, his inclination towards spiritual consciousness will be aroused. Right, so he sees them in connection with the Lord, how they function, their use and everything is connection with the Lord. There's nothing that's his, it's all the Lord's. He's just accepting what is useful for maintaining himself so he can be engaged in service. Then not only will it keep him from falling down into mundane consciousness, it'll actually revive Krishna consciousness. Because the spiritual aspect of their connection to Krishna and the Naishkarmi is there, so it removes the material. So it's very dynamic. The remnants of food and other articles offered to Bhagavan are known as Mahaprasad. It's a great misfortune that you have no faith in such extraordinary objects. Chudamani, let's drop this subject and return to the original point of our discussion. What is the proper behavior between the Yavanas and you people? Now it's not right. You people. Okay. So in other words, he means because it's an area he can't understand. Mm. So therefore, why discuss it?
We get this a lot when we're preaching.
Yeah. So then an area that they have no understanding, go into an area that they do. The point is just whatever they can connect to Krishna, that's fine. It's not that, you know, it has to go in some textbook way or that. Just whatever they can connect, that's great. You know, if they can appreciate the food is spiritual, but nothing else, then eat a lot of food, you know. Visit them often, taking plenty of food, right, you know. So like that, then they'll be purified. Then eventually they'll understand the rest. Vaishnavdas. As long as someone remains a Yavana, we remain indifferent to him. However, when someone who was formerly a Yavana becomes a Vaishnava, by the influence of Nitya Sukriti, we no longer consider him a Yavana. This is very clear in the following statement from the Padma Puran. If one considers a devotee of Bhagavan to be a member of the lowest of the four castes, Shudra, a member of an aboriginal tribe of hunters, Nishada, or an outcast dog-eater, Swapacha, merely because the devotee was taken birth in such families, one is assuredly destined for hell. Chudamani, I understand. Then can a Grihastha Vaishnav make a marriage relationship with a Yavana family? Because
didn't he answer that already?
Yeah,
he did, but he still is not quite. Means, in other words, you're bringing him closer, right? It just means. He was looking at it from the other thing. Okay, I'm doing this argument, I'm getting him going my direction, but now he's having to actually look at what he's saying. Because he came to that final point. He could not understand the difference between the nitya and naimittic. And it's not based on birth or anything. Because he can't understand that, because remember he's saying the thing is, how can he be functioning on a lower level on the naimittic and then on a higher level on the nitya? That's what he can't catch. You know, so how could he still be basically kind of living a Yavana lifestyle? But, you know, if he's a devotee, he's going to adjust that, of course. But still, he's in that social circle. He's in that position. So how can he be functioning on this higher platform? He can't catch those two. Because he's thinking it's ascending instead of descending. So now he's getting back to, so he's got to make his point. So this is all nice philosophy. So therefore, can they get married? You know, you bring it down to something practical, that by that he's expecting to push the point. Well, no, actually this and that. So therefore, I said, you know, but it's not. Vaishnava Das. From the general point of view, a yavana remains a yavana in the eyes of the general populace until he relinquishes his body. That's how people will look at it. But from the absolute point of view, he is no longer regarded as a yavana once he attains bhakti. Marriage is one of the 10 kinds of social rites, smarta karma. The grihastha Vaishnava is an Aryan, that is, if he is included within the 4 varnas, he should only marry within his own varna. Right, because there should be that equal nature and all that. Unless someone completely drops that and takes up. Like now, means we don't have that form. So one's been in one position, it doesn't really remain that way. You know, at least they don't apply it so much on the yavanas anymore, right? You know. Does that make sense? You know, but if India was still following very nicely the Vedic culture and the Varnashram and all that, but they're nicely following means they're following it not connected with Krishna, then we would have a lot of trouble being involved in things. Just like we've had preaching going on in Nepal basically almost as long as India, right? But the society there is not registered. Like that, unless it's just been registered recently. Why not? Because the smarta Brahmins, who are the ones who advise the king, they don't understand Vaishnavism, just like Chudamani here. Therefore, they consider they're not following things properly, and their Westerners are involved, and this and that, and they don't actually properly perform the Vaishnava Dharma. Right? Now, of course, if the king had Nepali Vaishnavs as his advisors, then you'd have a whole different thing. Then devotional service would be in a very strong position. Maybe. But unfortunately, he has smartas, and so it doesn't work good.
If he had Vaishnavas, would the smartas be registered?
Yeah, the Vaishnavas would really acknowledge that, just that they're... Yes. But so that's the thing. So that's why you'd see in India, those who had smartas as their advisors, then they would be against the Vaishnavas, and then those who had Vaishnavas as their advisors would like that. So the principle is Brahmins must be in the position, but then it's what Brahmins? So in general, you see, is the smartest seem to get into more, because they're more maturely inclined, so they make that extra effort, you know. Well, the Vaishnavas are more, you know, content in whatever their position. Does that make sense? So there's a huge Vaishnava community there. But somehow or another, you know, as far as the government, we're not connected. Right? It didn't work out so good for the government. You know, would have been better they had Vaishnava advisors. Okay. So, in other words, you follow this social custom. So if there is no social custom, you don't have to worry about it. If there is a social custom, then you worry about it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But that's specifically, you know, based on the Vedic, as opposed to the... does that make sense? In other words, the lower doesn't cause difficulty for the higher. But it doesn't matter that the higher causes difficulty for the lower, because that's always going to be there. Does that make sense? The Vedic culture, it's not that they didn't follow the Varnashram system because the tribals and all that weren't interested. Does that make sense? You don't apply it that way. Even though the religious duties associated with the 4 castes are naimittic in nature, they are still recommended for the maintenance of domestic life. One cannot become a Vaishnava simply by giving up the social customs of the 4 varnas. Vaishnavas should adopt whatever is favorable for bhakti, and one can only give up the duties of the varnas when he has become qualified to do so by genuine detachment. Right? In other words, you don't have to follow the varnashram elements if you're not trying to get any benefit from that. Right? Because the varnashram system gives a very nice social system, economic system, you know, in which dharma, artha, kama, and moksha can be very much appreciated. But if you don't need any of that, then you can give that up. It's not that one's a grihastha and one gives up varnashram. Grihastha is part of varnashram. You know, whether you like to say it is or not, that's the way it is. Right? Does that make sense? So when Vaishnava Das first came, he was a sannyasi. Right? And he remained that way until he actually understood the Vaishnava principle. Right? Then he dropped his position as a sannyasi. Right? And then took up that of, like, the Babaji. Does that make sense? He didn't do it immediately. Just like we see Lahiri Babu, he's living as a vanaprastha, but he's taking up the seriously the system. Right? So now you're having just a few persons who are living like that and preaching because people are looking for them, fine. But if you're having to go out, that means then you're taking on those who are having that mixed position and not necessarily having the background and the culture to know how to, what duty are, and therefore you perform them until that duty, the need of that duty is finished. So therefore, you have the Vedic system, the Varnashram system, as the social system, but its practice is Daiva Varnashram. So, because it doesn't matter. You can function within the Varnashram system connected to Krishna, or you can function outside if you're fully connected to Krishna. But the point is to connect. So by following Daiva Varnashram, that's going to be the most universally applicable to those who have not come to that position to give it up, though they're practicing devotees, or for those who may be interested in what the devotees are doing, how they'll find that they can fit in, right? Because they naturally have all those desires and needs. Does that make sense? So that's why then it's a natural thing that we use the system.
So Maharaj, when Srila Prabhupada established the farm communities, was he thinking that some devotees won't reach that level, so let them go to the farm, develop that mentality, and then preach?
Means Varnashram has already been established, because you had the Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, right? And you had the Brahminical activities. Just the Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra activities designated as such hadn't been done, right? But people were managing the temple, people were making money, people were doing just general work. All that's going on, but it's all being done for Krishna, so you don't make so much distinction. But so then it's just a matter of, I may be doing Shudra work in the temple, but it's just whatever the temple gives me. So he's actually living the Brahminical lifestyle. So it's a minor within the Brahminical. But when it's that, no, I want to live at a certain standard, I want to have a certain control over my lifestyle and independence, then it's that now you have to do those designated as Shudra activities. In other words, that the Shudra Varna has to manifest, or the Vaishya Dharma, Kshatriya Dharma has to manifest. Does that make sense? Then you can say that it's my money I'm doing, because otherwise he's doing Shudra work and he can't say, oh, because that Shudra, or say he's doing Vaishya work, so therefore the money's mine. No, it's the temple's. So it's just a matter of within devotional service. In other words, there's laws on how you deal with knowledge, administration, money, and work. Right? That has to be done nicely. So whether you're designating it within the bigger picture of the Varnashram as the Varna Dharma, or it's just doing the needful within the smaller circle, It doesn't matter. The mechanics are the same. You know what I'm saying? The man's managing his house, but it's not now he's the Kshatriya. Does that make sense? But the principles are the same. The protection and, all these things. There's a right and wrong, seeing that everybody's following, everyone's doing their duties. Everybody knows what their duties are. Right, but then when he's sitting down and telling them why they're doing things and this and that, that's not, now he's the Brahmin. Does that make sense? No, he's the Grihastha and he's doing this, but all those things are always within everything. But when it becomes separated, that this is how I make my money, so this is how I'm identified, that's a separate thing. So that Prabhupada established later, not so much because of the lack of the preaching or this or that, but because devotees wanted that naimittic kind of situation. They wanted more of that kind of independent, more of that. But it's still not fully, because it was still a devotee farm. It's still this and that, right? That makes sense, because the farm meant it's Krishna's land and everyone works together to do that, and you get things and you have your own house and you have this and that and everything works together. But it's working on that principle. But now when devotees talk about a farm, it's, well, who owns the land? You know, what kind of lease? What kind of this? What kind of, you know, nobody ever farms. What is that? Okay. So time's up.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Janitai Gaura Premananda.